Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find
one. Are you confused with the ups and downs in the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stock.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everybody. This is Peter, president of Euro Pacific Capital, host of the show. You got to bear me for a minute. My computer just all of a sudden died on me. And so now I need to bring up these websites. I was trying to read an article. A client had sent me an article on something from Goldman Sachs asking me to comment on it. Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to read it, so I will not be able to talk about that article. Maybe I can talk about it next week, but I will not be able to get to it. Anyway, the show is Wall Street Unspun. I do it every Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. 5 p.m. Pacific time. The show can be heard on shortwave radio. The signal is 5.07 megahertz, and it can be heard on my website at www.europac.net. www.europac.net. First of all, there's a couple of announcements. Again, I will be at the investment conference in New Orleans, October 21st to the 25th. That's coming up, I think, in about 2 weeks. I'm assuming there's still time to register if you haven't already done so. It should be a good time, a good conference down there, and I will be there from October 21st through the 25th. Also, as far as television appearances, I have agreed with the new channel, Fox Business News, which is going to launch on Monday. And it will be an all-day long business financial channel network, to compete with CNBC. And I have agreed to make regular appearances on that network, in addition to random appearances that I might make throughout the week, which I will, of course, update you about on my website. You can make a note that I will be on the show every Tuesday and Wednesday between 2 and 4 p.m. They will utilize me in panels and in one-on-one interviews on those time slots, Tuesdays and Wednesdays, from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. So, if you set, obviously I'm not going to be on for the entire hour, but I might be on for 15 or 20 minutes randomly throughout those 2 hours. So if you put your recorder on, your DVD recorder, you can fast forward to the sections where I am on. But you can rely on me always being on unless for some reason I can't make it if I'm traveling, and there might be a problem with the New Orleans conference. I think I'm flying home on a Wednesday, so I'm not really sure if I'll be able to do it or not. Maybe I will. But in general, I will always be on that Fox channel on Tuesdays and Wednesdays between the hours of 2 p.m. and 4 p.m. Eastern time. Anyway, again, let me give out the number to call for the show. The number to call is 888 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. I got a couple of emails last time about the show where people said that they prefer that I not take calls, because I didn't take any calls at all last time because of technical problems. And people said that they prefer just my talking. And while I appreciate that, and I know that everybody wants to hear what I have to say, I think the format of the call-in show works better for what I'm trying to accomplish with the show. Remember, I'm also trying to give my clients an opportunity to call and ask me questions to relate their experiences for other potential callers. A lot of my clients don't necessarily talk to me on a regular basis. They may talk to some of the other reps at Euro Pacific Capital, and it gives people an opportunity to ask a question or voice a concern But I do try to make an effort if I feel a caller is going off on a tangent or just talking in a way that's boring or that I think is, I try to cut it short. But I also, you know, I don't have a screener, and I don't have one, you know, for a number of reasons. I mean, but one is because I don't want the show to be screened. I don't want people to think that I am, you know, controlling who can call. And I think the fact that it is an open forum and that any of my clients are free to call, I think is very interesting. Because as I said, I don't know many people in my industry, in my profession, who could host a show like this, because they would be inundated with complaints. People would be calling up about all the money that they've lost. I think it's interesting that I can have this show, and we don't get those kind of calls. Anyway, although I did get an email very quickly on a topic related to commissions, where a client was upset that, you know, he got his confirmation and he realized that he paid a 3% commission and he was kind of upset. So I might as well try to address this a little bit for people who don't understand just how the commissions work at Euro Pacific Capital, because we're not a discount broker, right? So you can't expect to do trades at Euro Pacific Capital in Hong Kong or Australia or Singapore and expect to pay $5 or $10 or, you know, $20 or a trade. I mean, we just, you know, we charge full service commissions, which in many cases can be 3% or sometimes more, you know, depending on how small the trade is, of the value of the investment. And the reason is that we are trading these stocks directly in Hong Kong. We are not going through market makers. So when people go and place an order at a discount broker and they get a discount commission, the reason they're getting that discount commission is because the brokerage firm is simply routing the order to the market maker on the pink sheets, which is very easy to do. It's very low cost for the discount broker to route the order to the pink sheet. So they charge the client a low commission, but the client, you know, gets a lousy execution for that low commission. What we're doing at Euro Pacific Capital is we're routing the orders directly to local brokers in the country where the stock trades. Now, to do that, it's a lot more difficult and a lot more time-consuming and a lot more expensive for me as a brokerage firm. And so, you know, for doing that, for taking all the extra steps to get you a better execution, we charge a higher commission. I still believe the net result is that when you factor in my higher commission, you're still having more money in your pocket, meaning that you get more when you sell and you pay less when you buy, when you're going direct to a foreign exchange versus working through a market maker. Now, the fact that I charge you more commission to save you money, you know, that's how I justify, you know, my living. And of course, the second part about it is the discount brokers don't offer any guidance. You know, we do. The discount brokers don't help you pick the stocks or, you know, select the timing of your buys or sells. We do. Now, certainly there are occasions where our clients call up and on an unsolicited basis simply place an order to buy and sell a stock. And we don't give them any help whatsoever. All we do is simply provide them a better execution for their foreign stocks. Generally, we charge a little bit less for unsolicited orders than we do for solicited orders, but we still do not charge a commission as low or anywhere near as low as what a discount broker charges, but I'm confident that the clients are still receiving more money when they sell and paying less money than they buy. I think even if we doubled the commissions that we charge, I still think we would be saving the clients money. But anyway, I just want to make sure. I'm not sure if the person who sent that email is even listening to this show. But if, you know, just if we can, you know, just make sure people understand, more people understand how we do work. You know, we're not a discount broker, even though we can save people money on foreign stocks because of the fact that we're buying these stocks direct. We are a full service broker, and we do charge, you know, full service commissions for the transactions that we do. All right. Anyway, again, let me give the phone number again to call if you have any questions. It's 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. And I believe the phone lines are open. What's going on here? Anyway, you know, I just was watching a show on the evening news. I forget if it was ABC or NBC, but they were showing, you know, the real estate market, and they were at developments. And basically, I mean, a lot of what they're showing now is some of the things I've been saying, where they showed a lot of development projects that had been abandoned. I mean, you know, particularly in California, where the developers had just simply packed up and left houses half finished. I mean, some of the people living there are worried about, you know, the winds coming and blowing all these bricks and things off the roofs. I mean, basically, the developers have just given up and just walked away from these properties. And they're interviewing people who are living in these homes who maybe paid $500,000 or $600,000 for these townhomes a year ago, and now the same identical units are going up for auction from the same developers, but where they're offering them, you know, for a couple of hundred thousand less than what these people just finished paying. And, you know, they're really, you know, devastated by this. And I'm reading articles, too, about homes that are selling now in auctions, which is now one of the most popular ways for developers. These aren't foreclosure auctions necessarily. These are just developers that are trying to get rid of their houses that they built, and they don't want to just carry them anymore. They just want to get rid of them. And when they're having these auctions, you know, the prices are 20, 25, 30% or more less than, you know, what they were selling for. And when you read the accounts of these sales, they'll say, well, they're selling the houses 25% below the market or 30% below the market. And what the authors of these articles don't understand are probably what their other residents in the community who are complaining that the houses are being sold below market. They're not being sold below market. They're being sold at the market. These auctions are reflecting what the real market is. You know, what the market was a year or two ago when a lot of these people bought their houses, that was yesterday's market. The market today is the market. So when you have an auction and a house that, you know, was selling, a model that was selling for $500,000 sells for $250,000, they're not selling it below the market. They're selling it at the market. The market is $250,000. But people are just getting very reluctant to admit that this is really what happened, you know, that housing prices are really down, that it isn't just an isolated transaction. You know, people still think that their houses are going to come back. You know, I just did a radio show about 40 minutes. It ended about 10 minutes ago. I forget where it was syndicated. But I was really arguing quite a bit with a host who was trying to tell me how great it is, real estate is such a great investment, and that, well, it doesn't matter because even if people bought homes, even if they're worth less, they can just wait and eventually they'll have a good investment. I said, no, that's not the case. If somebody bought a house in the last couple of years, they're never going to get their money back. I mean, they overpaid. I said the best thing they can do is walk away from it. You know, if you bought a house for $1 million and now it's only worth $600,000 and you have an $800,000 mortgage, there's no reason to make that mortgage payment. You're not going to get whole. You overpaid. But I mean, people are having a real difficult time acknowledging what's actually happened in the real estate market, that these aren't, you know, temporary price drops where it's going to recover in a few months or 6 months. And I think that's one of the reasons that we haven't seen a bigger impact on consumer spending, because consumers are still in denial. And, you know, the crazy thing, in the same report I saw on the nightly news today, they mentioned that new constructions, right, are still happening. There's over 1 million units under construction. I mean, we're still having a building boom in a housing bust. I mean, people still don't understand. You know, they're still building these things. It's just amazing. And I think that just the numbers that came out today, I think it was a big drop in homes. I think home sales, it was the worst year in, I don't know, it was 10 years or 20 years. And it's only going to get worse. Anyway, we've got a bunch of calls queuing up. Let me pick up Gary from Virginia. Go ahead, Gary.
Hey, Peter. How are you? My wife and I have been listening to you recently, and we're becoming clients of your firm, so we really enjoy your insights. One of the things we've been talking about and listening to you is one of your key themes is how foreigners are going to be buying treasuries less and less. And then we saw an article on your webpage a couple days ago about the rulers of the Middle East, these oil producers are really pouring their petrodollars into the treasuries. And we have a strategic alliance, obviously, with the rulers of Saudi Arabia. And before the Olympics in China, we just think the Chinese are going to do everything they can to keep stability. And we want to kind of get your insight or your perspective on whether these folks and they're pouring, you know, their money into the treasuries is going to
split. I mean, the Chinese now, they're estimating, I forget, their purchases are up, you know, whatever it is, $50 billion a month. I mean, they're still supporting us. But, you know, it's going to change. I mean, look what happened overnight in Singapore. The Singapore dollar rose to a 10-year high. You know, that's been one of our favorite currencies. Many of our Singapore stocks last night, separate from that, hit new 52-week highs. The Singapore government announced that they're going to let their currency rise more rapidly, that they need to combat domestic inflation, and they're going to do that by allowing their currency to appreciate. The Singapore government has a basket that they weigh their currency to, and they've been, you know, pegging it to this basket. So they've been artificially suppressing the Singapore dollar. They're saying that they're going to let it rise more rapidly. So these are the indications of things that are happening around the world that is basically going to knock the legs out from under the dollar. And I don't know, at some point, you know, the Saudis, and, you know, the Saudis recently, you know, this is the first time, you know, we cut interest rates by 50 basis points, and the Saudis didn't do it. And they normally follow us because their currency is pegged to ours. And, you know, but the problem when countries peg their currency to ours and then we have an irresponsible monetary policy, it creates inflation in their currency. See, the main reason that people used to peg their currency to the dollar was because we had a better currency. It gave them stability. It was a way for other countries to create confidence in their currency and to combat inflation. They would say, we're going to peg our currency to the dollar, and that's going to give our currency strength. Now, pegging your currency to the dollar makes your currency weak. It makes you have more inflation, not less. So you can't peg, it's like you can't tether your ship to the Titanic, you know, and go down with it. So it doesn't make any sense for countries to peg their currency to the dollar now.
But can the Saudis sort of keep us propped up for a while with all their oil revenues increasing?
No, but I don't think they're going to. And remember, you know, our market is becoming increasingly less important because the rest of the world is booming. You know, you've got a billion people in China. You've got all these people in India. You know, these are consumers who can actually afford to pay for the things that they're buying. You know, the Chinese can afford to import oil from the Arabs and actually pay them in currency that they want. You know, they don't have to, you know, prop it up. So, you know, I think it's coming to an end. And, you know, over the next couple of years, you know, all these mortgage payments are going to reset. You know, people are going to appreciate that we can't pay our bills. And, you know, the real estate market is going to continue to implode. And as this economy really sinks into recession, the world is going to give it up. They're not going to just keep extending us more and more credit, because the worse shape our economy gets in, the more money they have to lend us and the less we can pay them back. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. So you basically don't see these developments with the oil money and the Chinese really altering the course of events here. It may affect the timing.
Remember, they don't give us the money. Remember, they loan it to us. So when, you know, they're propping us up by buying our bonds, which means we have to pay them back. You know, these loans aren't free. You know, I had this argument, you know, the Wall Street Journal wrote that article. I talked about it last week, where they said that high oil prices aren't a problem as long as the Saudis lend us the money to buy it. Well, but we have to pay it back. They're not giving us the money. At least they don't think they're giving it to us. We got to pay them back with interest. So, I mean, it's a huge problem. And the more money we have to borrow to buy oil, the deeper into debt we go, and the worse ultimately it's going to be.
So they can't really save us from our own predicament.
No. The only thing you could do is save yourself. You know, as a nation, we've already screwed ourselves. I mean, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that we've done this. But the only thing you can do is recognize it before you personally, you know, get dragged down with everybody else. And the only way to do that is to get your money, you know, out of U.S. dollar assets, to get into, you know, the Singapore dollar, you know, get into the yuan and this Hong Kong dollar, get into the Australian dollar, get into the Canadian dollar. You know, the Canadian dollar now is almost worth $1.03. You know, I mean, we were buying Canadian dollars for 65 cents. The Australian dollar is now over 90 cents. We were borrowing it at the lows under 50 cents. You know, these currencies are going up, and they're going to go a lot higher, I think. And so all you can do is save yourself and, you know, get your money as quickly as you can, you know, over to Europe Pacific Capital so that we can get it out of the dollar as quickly as you can. Anyway, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Okay, great. I got Tony on the line from Los Angeles. Go ahead, Tony.
Hi. My question was on how many tricks do you think they have to delay the inevitable that's left in their quiver?
They only have one trick. That's print money, inflation. That's all they ever have. That's the only trick they got. You know, it worked for a while. You know, when the NASDAQ bubble burst, because they blew up the real estate bubble, and that bought them some time. But, you know, I don't think there's another bubble to inflate. I don't think there's another asset bubble. I think the money that they're printing now is just going to go into regular old inflation, meaning it's just going to cause prices to rise for consumer goods, for commodities. And I don't think the money, the extra money that the Fed creates, is going to find its way into the U.S. economy. It's, you know, it's going to find its way into global assets. You know, some of it might go into U.S. stocks, big multinational stocks that benefit from a weak dollar, that benefit from, you know, strengthen overseas economy, but it's not going to go into the domestic economy. It's not going to be providing jobs for Americans. It's not going to go to help American homeowners play. You know, our economy is headed for recession, regardless of how much money the Fed creates to try to stop it.
And then my other problem is with the older generations, like my parents. It's very hard to convince them of the reality that's not being shown by the media.
Yeah, look, a lot of people, you know, are very stubborn. You know, a lot of Americans are very arrogant. You know, they don't want to listen to the truth. They don't want to hear the truth. There's a lot of cognitive dissonance. You know, I mean, I feel it a lot personally, you know, when I, you know, when I'm on a television show or a radio show, and people kind of, you know, have the shoot the messenger mentality. A lot of people just don't want to know. I mean, they don't want to know this stuff. And, you know, you can, you know, get a copy of my book, you know, let people look. Hey, just read this guy's book with an open mind, see what you think, you know. But, you know, there's only so much you can do. You know, if you can't, you know, make people understand or give them the tools to figure this out for themselves, it's unfortunate, but they're just going to have to learn the lesson the hard way. And, you know, but you do what you can do. And I think, my, you know, my book, I always recommend that people, you know, buy several copies of my book. You know, give them away. Give them to people who you think really would benefit from this information. And just maybe a light bulb will go off. You know, and maybe some people will think, you know what, maybe this guy Schiff is wrong. You know, maybe the U.S. isn't going to collapse, but, you know, maybe he's right. Maybe there's a chance he's right, and maybe they'll do something. Maybe they'll hedge their bets a little bit. Maybe they'll take some of their money and invest it along the lines that I suggest, just on the odd chance that maybe I'm right.
Mm-hmm.
And my whole approach has always been that my recommendation should do well regardless of whether I'm right or wrong. That even if we're not doing anything wrong, even if the U.S. economy is in fine shape and I'm just somehow missing the new reality, even if that's the case, what's wrong with having safe, dividend-paying investments in the most mature developed markets in the world?
Right. And I can't convince my parents of that reality, but I was wondering, I was trying to research other choices about basically moving their CDs into foreign currencies. Is that something you guys can...
Yeah, I mean, look, we mainly recommend that when you have foreign currencies that you invest in either stocks or bonds, preferably common stocks. I think those are still the best investments to get yield. But those are currency investments. So when you go buy a stock in Singapore, you own the Singapore dollar because it's a Singapore dollar asset. The dividends that the stock pays are in Singapore dollars. So you get the same currency exposure by owning a real estate trust in Singapore that you get by owning Singapore government bonds or a CD in Singapore dollars. But what you get is the added upside potential of the Singapore real estate market, and you get the extra dividend yield associated with the higher yields on the REITs than what you can get in the CD. Now, the trade-off is you assume the risk that the Singapore property market goes down. But I think the risk-reward trade-offs are in favor of buying. I still think that I'd rather have real assets than just paper.
Yeah, my problem is I just can't get my parents to see the light of that. So is there a...
You can't do anything. Well, at least try to protect yourself and, do what you can with your own money, you know?
Yeah, but is there an intermediate step with purchasing possibly bonds?
Yeah, if they think that foreign equities are too big a jump, if they just want to buy government bonds in Australia or Singapore or Switzerland or someplace like that, we can certainly get them started that way. Or they can just buy, you know, a mutual fund that invests in foreign money markets. I mean, they can take a baby step. But the risk they run if they take baby steps is, you know, if the dollar collapses before they move, you know, a substantial portion of their wealth. And so, you know, maybe instead of losing 100% of their net worth, they only lose 90%. You know, but, you know, so they really need to educate themselves because I don't think we have a lot of time. I think this whole thing is going to unravel over the next couple of years.
Yeah, going back to my tricks question is I wasn't too clear on Bernanke's exemptions that he issued to the big banks, what exactly they're hiding with those.
No, I'm not even sure what you're talking about there. But anyway, I thank you for the call. I want to quickly take a break for a commercial, and I will be back for additional calls as soon as the break is over.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro-Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Hi, Peter Schiff back, and the number to call toll-free with any of your questions or comments is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. You know, before I quickly go back to the phones, I wanted to talk a little bit about the idea that the dollar, that the falling dollar is going to be this big boon to U.S. manufacturers. And I think this is going to be the subject of my commentary, which will be on my website by Friday. But, you know, it's not just a panacea that American manufacturers are not going to find, you know, that a weak dollar is going to be, you know, a great boon to them. And for a number of reasons. I mean, number one, as the dollar weakens, of course, the cost of all the raw materials that go into the manufacturing process that American manufacturers have to pay, those raw material costs go up. The cost of energy, you know, in particular, the cost of metals, while at the same time, the cost of those imports are falling for our competitors. So a lot of people don't understand, and this was actually even pointed out to me by a caller, not to the radio show, but at my firm. But many of American manufacturers don't really manufacture. What they really do is assemble. They assemble the parts that are manufactured in other countries and brought in. You know, an example would be, you know, a golf club manufacturer. Let's say golf clubs are manufactured in the United States. But basically, the golf club consists of an imported head, an imported shaft, and an imported grip. Maybe the grip comes from Mexico, the shaft comes from Indonesia, the head comes from China. That's where they're manufactured. All of those products get shipped in the United States, and the American manufacturer, in quotes, merely assembles those three components, and now they have a golf club. Well, as the dollar falls in value, the cost of all the parts that need to be imported are also going to go up. And so that's going to make American assemblers less competitive than they were before because they have to pay more to import their parts. You know, also, you know, interest rates are a big cost of manufacturers. There's a lot of borrowed money. There's a lot of debt. And as the dollar weakens, as the dollar becomes less attractive, ultimately, it's going to force up interest rates in the United States as lenders look to be compensated for this risk. So American companies are going to see their capital costs, their borrowing costs going up as a result of the higher interest rates that will flow from a weakening dollar. So when you have, you know, upward pressure on your raw material costs, upward pressure on the prices of your imported components, upward pressure on interest rates, and of course, as the dollar creates inflation, as the cost of living is going up, as it costs people more to eat and heat their homes, workers are going to demand more wages. So ultimately, the weaker dollar is going to lead to domestic labor costs going up because workers are not going to just sit there and work for the same number of dollars if the cost of living is rising. They're going to demand a higher wages. And so you're going to see these pressures. So there's going to be a lot of reasons that the weakness in the dollar is going to undermine the competitiveness of American manufacturers. Because it's not simply weak currency. I mean, it's not like all the manufacturing is being done, you know, where they have the cheapest currencies, you know. So people who are looking for this automatic benefit, I think that there's going to be a lot of problems that people don't anticipate for American businesses as a direct result of the weakness of our currency. Anyway, let's go back to the calls. I think are we at Ken in California?
Hi, Peter. Last week, as you probably noticed, all the banks, the brokerages came out with these warnings saying, you know, I hate to warn you guys, but our earnings for the third quarter are going to be really bad. Well, so then I looked to see. I bet you they just got hammered. No, all this, their share prices all went up on those horrible warnings. And what the Wall Street news media was saying as well, that investors are now much more comfortable with the banks and the brokerages now that they've put all their troubles behind them.
Yeah, that's the rationalization. People were waiting for that shoe to drop, buy the rumor, sell the fact. Believe me, you know, this is just the tip of the iceberg. This is not the first warning that they're going to have. It's going to be a lot worse. They're going to have that. They're going to have to come clean about a lot more stuff. This is not the end of it. This is not the end of the announcements and the warnings. This is only the beginning. And, you know, I if you look on my website, I had an argument with Ben Stein on one of the Fox shows where he was recommending Merrill Lynch, and another girl on there recommended Goldman Sachs. And they said, well, they're really cheap because they're trading at 5 and 6 times earnings. And I said, they don't have any earnings anymore. And they were having a big argument. And I said, look, you're looking in the rearview mirror. These earnings are going to disappear. You know, they're going to have losses. I mean, they're, you know, and this is going to happen. I mean, there are so much losses buried within the books of these financials. Because remember, they, you know, they made their money off of securitizing all these crap loans. And they can't do that anymore. And now they're stuck with a bunch of these things. They're also the counterparty on all sorts of complicated derivative transactions where they're going to lose a lot of money. And, you know, it's a different world. I mean, the fees that they were able to earn in these M&A deals and private equity deals, they're going to go away. I mean, the firms, and there's going to be lawsuits. I mean, it's just going to be a mess.
But why, when you mentioned Merrill Lynch, They said, you know, we're down 60%, and then they said, well, how does the fourth quarter look? And their answer was, well, that's too hard to predict.
Yeah.
But on that news, I mean, what corporation says we can't predict the next quarter? It's the same as saying that what you're saying. Well, who is buying these shares on that type of news that there's...
But, you know, maybe it was a lot of short covering. Maybe the shorts took the bad news as an opportunity to buy. But look, you know, it doesn't really matter what happens to these stocks in the short run. I mean, they're going to go down. There's no reason to own them. You know, anything that you're going to own, you know, you just got to own it abroad. You know, and even the stocks that I'm bullish, you know, again, the biggest position we have in an oil company is this one over in Australia. It just made another new high. I mean, the stock is up sevenfold since I started buying it for clients in about 1999, 2000. It's up sevenfold. You know, I own it. I also own the big U.S. oil stocks, and they're barely doubled in price what they were 7 years ago. You know, so the returns, you know, it pretty much no matter what it is, it's better abroad. So just ignore the U.S. market. It doesn't even matter. You know, the only U.S. stocks that I think that are really worth buying are some of the mining companies. But, you know, other than that, the energy companies, the natural resource companies, the agricultural companies, the you know, whatever you'd like to buy, there's better opportunities to buy these things abroad.
When the financials...
And don't even think about buying these financials. I mean, that's, you know, you're throwing your money away there.
No, I'm saying that when they do now announce their official numbers for the third quarter and they say, oh, we're only down 59%, then should we expect the stock prices to go up, saying, well...
I don't know what to expect. I'm not in these stocks, you know? I mean, I don't know. I know they're going to go down eventually. I don't know exactly the path they're going to take when they fall, but I think they're going to go the way of the home builders. You know, these home builders are all down 80%+ from where they were a couple years ago, and they're still going to fall.
Now, I was just trying to find an explanation for who's buying them and why the price is going up.
Nobody knows, and you can't find it. Who was buying all those internet stocks in 1999 and 2000, and why were they doing it? Who knows why people do things? I mean, people do very foolish things. Most of the people are investing other people's money. They're investing on momentum. They're investing based on a chart pattern. Who knows? But, you know, from a long-term investor, what we're doing is, you know, we understand the big picture fundamentals. We know what's going on with the economy, and we know how we're supposed to invest. And all the rest of it is a bunch of noise.
I did hear one rumor that could possibly explain it, which was at a local supermarket, somebody said they thought they saw Ben Stein had hijacked a shipment of cereal boxes, and he was going through them trying to find shares of financial stocks in there.
Yeah, so you saw it. So anyway, thanks for the call.
Bye now.
Okay, and let's go to Fan Yang in New York.
Yes. Hi, Peter. I called you about 2 weeks ago. I'm now in the process of becoming a client of Europe Pacific Capital. Still have some paperwork to move my accounts over. The question is that I'm only started investing really in earnest for 2 years, and I've put money overseas from day one, and now I'm actually going to totally move overseas, pretty much 100%, and then with gold and that stuff, but no U.S. equities. I've also since liquidated the last bit of U.S. equities I've had. And the question is, if this is going to happen 2 years from now, I'm not sure I have enough time to be able to save up an appreciable amount of money to weather the this kind of a storm as you're describing now. I'm just wondering, how possible.
Well, look, first thing is you protect what you've got, right? So whatever you've managed to save up, that needs to be protected. Now the question is, can you earn more dollars and turn it into more foreign assets before the bottom drops out of the dollar?
Depends
on how long it's going to take. But, there's nothing we can do about that.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to protect your wealth. And, ultimately, when the dollar collapses, you're going to hopefully be able to get a job where you earn a lot more dollars. I mean, it's not the big decline is going to be for people who already have amassed a lot of money, people who have worked 30 or 40 years who are retiring. They really need to get their money out of the dollar because they can't earn their money back. Their working days are over mainly, and so they need to protect their wealth. But if you're still young enough,
I'm only in my 20s. I start doing internationally from day one.
What's going to happen? Look, when the dollar collapses, and maybe instead of earning, I don't know what you earn, but let's say you're earning $50,000 a year. So maybe in a few years you'll earn $300,000 or $400,000 a year. Maybe it'll have the same buying power that $50,000 has today, but I don't know. You'll still be able to earn more money. Now, there's always a chance that things get so bad here that you might have to pick up and move to another country where you have better opportunities to make a living. I don't know what the U.S. government's going to do. I don't know what kind of ridiculous and onerous taxes and regulations, President Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Congress
to 80%
might impose on us. I don't know. But, we have no control over that.
Right.
But what we can do is we can try to make sure that we don't have any savings that are at risk, that we don't have our financial assets in dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And, I know that if you're going to work in the United States, that you're going to have to find a way to earn a lot more dollars to be able to enjoy the same quality of life. And for a lot of people, it's going to be very difficult because it's just, they're not going to be able to make enough dollars to be able to consume the way we've been consuming.
Right.
Which,
fortunately, I'm not consuming a whole that much. Basically, I scrimp my lifestyle.
What kind of work do you do?
Computers, high tech, but I
scrimp. But you're good. You've got some good skills, and you can sell those skills to the highest bidder, and it might end up that you end up selling your skills to a European firm or an Asian firm. Maybe you work on the Internet and get paid from somebody in Europe or Asia, or maybe you pick up and leave the country. I don't know what's going to happen. A lot of people immigrated into this country. Around the turn of the last century, we had a wave of immigrants coming to America.
Right.
Why did people leave China and leave Europe to come to America? Because there were better opportunities here, because we were freer, because there were more opportunities. And hopefully it won't be a situation where Americans have to flee the country early in this century because the opportunities are better abroad.
Right.
You know what? You're young enough that maybe you'll be able to do that. One thing you can start to do is start to learn some foreign languages.
Which I'm Chinese.
Yeah, well, that's good. And if you could speak Mandarin, you're in a great situation because it's a lot easier for you to pick up and leave.
Yeah.
I hope it doesn't come to that. I hope that we don't.
Right.
But you've got that ability. But the problem is a lot of people who are my clients or potential clients who have grandchildren here or children and who are 60 years old, they don't have that luxury. They want to be able to stay in this country. And the only way to do that is, and stay here with any kind of style is to protect their wealth before it's too late.
Right.
And that means getting out of U.S. dollars. You don't want to get stuck holding the bag for the housing bubble. This is what the government is doing right now. They're trying to artificially levitate real estate prices. They're trying to slow the deflation. They don't want the air to come out of the bubble. They want to bail everybody out. Well, but they don't want to raise taxes to bail people out. That people would scream bloody murder.
Tax.
So they're hoping they can bail people out with inflation. They can print enough
money to
make everything better.
That's still a tax.
Of course, but people don't know it's a tax. And as long as they can keep putting out these phony CPI numbers that say that inflation is only 2 or 3%, they don't give a damn how much inflation they create.
I don't believe those numbers.
Of course, you don't believe them, and I don't believe them, but, the government still gets away with putting out the propaganda.
Well, hopefully that'll give me enough time, buy me enough time to save up as much.
Yeah, you know, I don't even understand, too. According to the government, right, year over year, in the last year, food prices are up about 4%, according to the government, which is still about twice the overall CPI, which they claim is around 2%. But I don't even know how it's possible that food prices over the last year are up 4%. I mean, they've got to be up at least three times that.
Yeah, it's.
I mean, there are so many things, items that you can point to. Dairy products, you know, and meats, and you know, that are up 50% from where they were a year ago. I mean, breads and pastas, and I mean, I can't. And which means if you have so many food items that are up 20% and 30% from where they were a year ago, yet the government claims that overall food prices are only up 4%. Then, according to the government, there must be whole categories of food items that are down 10% or 20% from where they were yet last year. I mean, I don't know what these items are because I'd love to buy some of them.
Well, by the way, a comment to, I think, the first caller about his parents. I have the same, a very similar situation with my parents, but instead I'm just taking matters in my own hand and try to save up money out of my pocket.
What you can, again, have you read my book?
I have your book. My parents have your book. I already gave this book to other people, so.
And they're still not convinced?
Yeah, it's, I'm doing the best I can.
All right, well, good luck. Keep trying.
But my parents, I have to, because they're already approaching retirement, I'm just going to take matters into my own hands and go ahead and...
Because if they go broke, you're going to be the one that has to support them.
Yeah, so I'm just doing it now.
Yeah, all right, well, good luck. Appreciate the call.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, let's take one more break. I think we've got three more calls on hold, so let's, you know, we don't need any more calls for the last segment. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back for the last segment and the rest of the calls.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
We are back, and let's go straight to the phones. Bill in Michigan. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, Pete, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Question. I called Euro Pacific and I wanted to open an account, but he said, you know, to do things online. You know, everything was online there. I want some paper format. You know what I'm saying? To, you know.
Well, basically, the way you open up an account, and brokers shouldn't just tell you to fill out the online application. In fact, I'll have a word with the brokers tomorrow. There is a way to fill out an application on the internet. Just, but it makes it easier because a lot of times when people are hearing, you know, sometimes we can't understand, you spell your name, how do you spell that, what's the phone number, a lot of times it's easy to have you write all that information out and submit it, that way we get it accurately. But what happens is we take that information and then we create an application and then we send you the paperwork that needs to be signed. But what you can also do is you can give the broker or the sales assistant the information over the telephone, and then we can take down the information that way and generate an account. But a lot of times people like to do it over the internet because that way we can get it in writing from you, and there's fewer mistakes as far as maybe transposing a digit in your Social Security number or getting something wrong.
Right, but I don't like to give Social Security numbers and everything.
Yeah, look, if you don't want to give it on the, you know, on the internet, you know, you can still just, you know, give all the information to the representative on the telephone, and they will take it down. I mean, that's how we always did things until recently when we put up that online application. But what happens with a lot of the online applications is people go to the internet and fill out an application without ever having talked to anybody. They just happen to go to the website, they see where they can fill out an account, and they do it. But if you're already on the line with a broker and you haven't gone to the internet to fill out an application, there's no real reason that you have to do that. You can simply fill out an application on the phone with the representative that you're talking to.
Okay, who should I talk with? Anybody in special?
Well, I mean, whoever you were talking, if you were talking to anybody, I mean, it doesn't really matter. You know, you can talk to anybody. Most of my brokers are registered in Michigan. So pretty much, you know, almost most people should be able to help you.
Okay.
I don't know if you were talking to anybody at all in the past.
Yeah, I think I got his name. I got it written down. I can't remember at the present.
Just give him a call and just say, yo, I want to open up an account. And, you know, but I'm going to make sure I'm going to send a note to the brokers this evening. Just, you know, when people want to open up an account, it is the broker isn't supposed to say, go do it on the Internet. They can let you know that there's the option if you don't want to give the information over the phone.
And that's what he told me. They'll go on the Internet, it's all there, and then fill it out, and then we'll be in contact with you. And I said, well, I didn't want to do it that way, so I figured I'll talk to you, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, the other question, there's two more quick things here. Like the previous gentleman said, you know, about his parents. I've got the same problem, and what a lot of people are thinking is that I'm investing overseas. What happens is, you know, Jimmy Carter era, let's say. You know, we froze Iranian assets, on and on and on. You know what the program, what that was.
Well,
what is to say that somebody says, well, we got funds, X amount of dollars in whatever country, and they, you know, the United States and that country happens to get into some type of a disagreement and they freeze assets. Now, what do you do?
Well, I don't think that, Australia or Singapore or Switzerland or Canada is going to try to freeze assets that Americans own in those countries. I mean, it's never happened before, and I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, there'd be no reason. Those countries aren't going to be in trouble. If anything, we might try to freeze. Our government is what we have to worry about. Maybe our government will try to confiscate from us the foreign assets that we own. That's a real threat. I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but I'm not worried about Australia trying to confiscate the Australian assets that Americans own. I'm worried about the American government trying to confiscate Australian assets that Americans own.
Yeah.
Because we're in financial trouble and they want our assets.
Oh. Okay, quick question about the real estate market. We had an auction here a week ago in Detroit. You can pick it up on DETnews.com. 200-300 houses were supposed to go for sale. 22 people showed up for the auction. Auction was canceled. No interest. So that tells you where the market is.
Yeah, the market is going a lot lower. There's still so much denial. People still have no clue how big this real estate bubble is, what it means when it's going to burst, not just to the housing market, but to the whole economy. I mean, this is completely amazing to me to watch this and to watch the utter denial by everybody with respect to what's going to happen.
Yeah, well, that's what it was. They said usually 500 to 600 people show up, and when they had 22 people for the auction, you know what would have happened to prices. They would have been picking houses up for $5,000 and $10,000, so that's why the auction.
They canceled the auction. I mean, so there's this. I mean, why would people want to buy? Remember, home ownership right now in this country is at an all-time record high. Everybody owns a home. People own 2 and 3 homes. People who's going to buy these homes? I mean, there's no. What's the demand? I mean, the demand used to be, well, speculators were going to buy them, but who? I mean, who's going to? So. Prices are going to have to collapse. We built way too many homes. That's the problem. And, you know, they're building more. I said they're building millions more, even though there's no demand for the ones that are already sitting empty.
Yeah, well, they had what these were. These were mansions in the old districts where, you know, you'd have to duplicate this house today for $2-3 million. They're already selling for about 100 and a quarter to 90,000. They still can't unload them.
Yeah, as I said, you know, houses, the building industry is going to grind to a halt because most of these houses are going to be selling for less than the cost to construct them because, you know, we didn't need them. That's the problem. People built a lot of these McMansions in areas where people don't even want to live.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll let you go get the other callers. I'll give them a buzz tomorrow. Thank you.
To the call. Okay, let's go to Steve in Los Angeles.
Hi, good evening, Peter. The denial is getting to me, too. I can barely watch these television business channels anymore because they've got asset manager after asset manager in total denial of what's going on, and it gets quite frustrating to even watch these anymore. But I had a question on diversification of a portfolio for you. When I moved to Euro-Pacific, I had... before that I had, you know, mutual funds, some bond funds, and some equities. Now, since I'm with you, I basically own equities, I keep some cash in the Merck Fund, and I have some gold at the Perth Mint. I no longer have any exposure to bonds, and so I was wondering whether, A, you think I might look into having some foreign bonds, or would I have access to, for instance, a commodity pool, where I would get something that would play against equities?
Well, I wouldn't. Look, I personally don't like bonds. invest right now. I would rather have you be just in short-term debt instruments like you have in the Merck Fund, or, you know, get your income off of securities, off of stocks like utilities and REITs and things like that. I just think that, you know, they're sounder right now. They're better investments for you than bonds. You know, that might, I might feel differently, you know, if interest rates were higher. And foreign central banks were being less inflationary. They weren't printing money as much. But in an era where everybody around the world is creating too much money, I just don't think it makes sense to own a lot of paper. I think it makes more sense to own assets that can maintain their value in the face of worldwide irresponsible monetary policy. But if you want to get commodity exposure, I mean, we do recommend certain commodity investments, some of these closed-end funds in London that specifically hold baskets of commodities. There's some other funds that we recommend for direct commodity exposure. But also, you get a lot of commodity exposure indirectly just by owning companies in Australia or Canada or New
Zealand. I absolutely do that.
Even though they have nothing to do with commodities, since the economies of those countries benefit from rising commodities, and since their currencies benefit from the strength in commodities, you benefit from it indirectly by being in those countries. So you know you might have some of that exposure already.
I think the only, I mean, I own a lot of stuff stocks, as you talk about. So and I guess, and I also own something through that London Exchange, those ETFs,
uh-huh.
Commodity Exchange. But they're all long, and I guess I was reading recently where things like public and private commodity pools can actually sort of go against, you know, bear markets or, you know.
Well, you mean, they go short some of these things.
Go short, yeah, I mean, they have a...
Yeah, well, we're not, I mean, I'm not wanting to be on the short side of these markets. I mean, being on the short side of the market is, you know, you're betting that the prices are going to fall and that money is going to gain value. I don't think so. I think money is going to lose value relative to stuff. I mean, I think money is losing value everywhere. I mean, I think even the euro or even the yen or, you know, the other currencies, they're being debased. I mean, right. I mean, central banks around the world are being irresponsible. I think America and the Fed is the driving force behind that irresponsibility. But they're acting in a way that is not in the interest of people who are just saving cash. So I think you have to save stuff. My outlook might change at some point, you know. But right now, and so far, I think over the last 8 to 10 years, and even a shorter time horizon. My clients who are owning stocks are doing much, much better than people who own bonds.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to be out of the bonds. I just wanted to make sure, feel like I was diversified enough.
I don't have your particular account.
I know, I'm not trying to get that.
But I'm sure, like, depending, that's our whole goal. But what we try to do is help create a diversified portfolio. Regardless of how much you have, we try to diversify the positions based on geographic location, some industry, on currency, and try to create a basket. But most of the stocks that we're buying are, you know, more conservative stocks within their local countries. We're not, you know, trying to buy the high growth companies. You know, we're buying, you know, what I call the widow and orphan type stocks. So as far as stocks go, you know, we're taking less risk than normal. And as long as you're investing long-term money, even if some of the stocks temporarily decline, you know, the dividend yield should still be there. And the key is to own these stocks and collect the income, regardless of what happens to their price, because we're buying them because we want to own the company. We want to participate in the profitability through the dividends. We don't want to trade these stocks. We want to own them. And so just because the price happens to go down, and if it doesn't affect the overall profitability of the business, it doesn't really matter to us.
All right. Well, listen, thanks for your time tonight.
Sure. Thanks for the call. And the last caller on the line is Eugene from Indiana. Go ahead, Eugene.
Okay. I've been a client for almost 3 years, and as a whole, I'm pleased with the results. But I have a question about the Canadian Energy Trust, of which I have, I'm in two of them. I don't understand, or I never did understand how they differ from ordinary stocks. And I heard you tell a caller, or two callers, they'll eventually go to zero, but are worth keeping for the dividend, which...
Well, I mean, basically, eventually, and I don't know when that is, right? Because all these companies, these energy trusts, have reserves, and they announce what their reserve life is. You know, we have 10 years worth of reserves, which means if they don't expand their reserves, 10 years from now, they won't have any reserves left, so they won't have a business left. And so you're going to be gradually paid out all the profitability of all that oil and gas being pumped out over that 10-year period. Now, as it stands, what happens is most of these companies find ways of expanding their reserves, acquiring new reserves, and so they constantly extend their reserve life. And that's what's been my experience over the 8 or so years I've been buying these, where trusts that I bought, 5 and 6 years ago, where they had 10-year reserve lives, now they still have 10-year reserve lives. So, but there's no guarantee that they're going to be able to do that. But I'm buying these stocks because I want to own them. I want to own them until they're worth zero. And maybe that'll be in 20 years and not 10, or maybe it'll be in 25 years. But what I want to own is the oil and gas, and I want to get a check every month from the oil and gas. And let's assume one of these stocks, let's assume somebody puts, $100,000 in one of these stocks. And let's say, 15 years from now, it's worth zero. But let's say in the last year, in the 15th year, they earn $300,000 in dividends, based on how valuable those last barrels of oil are when they ultimately sell them. So it doesn't mean that it's a bad investment if in the end there's nothing left. What counts is how much you get out of it during the time period between when you buy it and when it ultimately becomes worthless. And if you end up receiving 10 or 20 times your original investment back over the years, it's fine. And so that's why I say I don't care, about the short-term price. I'm not trying to trade these energy trusts. I want to own them. I want the oil. I want the natural gas, because I want to participate in the profitability of selling that oil and gas every year, because I think they're going to get a lot more money for the oil and gas in 2 years, in 5 years, than they're getting right now. So in the short run, I don't care about the price. The fact that the price goes down is great, because it means that new clients can buy more shares for less money. And, now, unfortunately, what's happening with a lot of our trusts is they're getting bought out. I mean, we have three trusts right now that have been taken over by other companies for cash, because the prices are so cheap. And one of the reasons they got so cheap was because the Canadian government decided to impose higher taxes on these things, which are going to kick in a few years. And that caused a lot of investors to sell these things. It caused the prices to get depressed and made them ideal targets for foreign takeovers. And that's what's happening. But, either way, I think most of these trusts are still great buys, and we're still recommending them today.
Oh, okay, I had a question. I didn't realize that the dividend might outstrip the total principal you got in the
eventually. And remember,
at some point, wouldn't it be a good idea to trade them in for something else before any of the cumulative dividend is paid for by a drop in the market price? That's the main
question. I don't know how to time it. I just want to own oil and gas. And I think this is right now, these Canadian energy trusts are a very good way to own oil and gas reserves, to own the resource itself. And I think most of them are still very cheap, the ones that we like, and you just want to buy them. And don't worry about what they're worth at the end. Just hold them until the end. And you never know. I mean, as I said, the reserve life could end up being double or triple what we think it is. But regardless, I think we're going to earn a lot of money, and we don't get taxed. Remember, a lot of the dividend is not even taxed, because it's considered a return of principal. Anyway, thanks for the call. If you have more questions on these trusts, just call up one of the brokers at Euro Pacific Capital, and they'll be able to talk to you about them.
Okay.
Anyway, well, thanks for listening again. I will be on the radio again next Wednesday. And don't forget to watch me on Fox on Tuesday and Wednesday. It'd be interesting to take some calls to hear your reactions from those shows Tuesday and Wednesday on Fox Business News. Don't forget, order a copy of my book, A Crash Proof, How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse. If you've already bought it, buy another one. I'm sure you've got a friend or a parent or a child who could benefit from reading it. Thanks again for listening. I will be back again at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific next time. And again, the shows are on my website at www.europac.net. So long, everyone.